Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, everyone. Aside from our usual salty language, I just want to put a trigger warning on this episode. We talk about a lot of difficult topics in this episode, especially around sexual assault and sexual abuse. And I just wanted to say, if you or someone you love is experiencing either of these things, please call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Hey guys, welcome to Little Miss Recap. I'm Amy Archer, I'm your host. Today I'm here with Leslie DJ. Hello, Leslie.
Hi, Amy. How's it going?
It's going. I've been in a simmering rage over
the
we were talking about, which is quiet on the set. So much so that I had to scoot over to Backdoor Friends and dump some of that rage in there last night.
Yeah, and I wake up to this tag and I'm like, wait, what's going on?
I did the classic wall of text.
Yeah.
We're talking about Quiet on the Set, and my kids watched some of this. I was a little too old for this. But when Dan Schneider had his reemergence with like Henry Danger, Sam and Kat, like all the stuff that kind of came later, my kids watched. So I remembered it.
What my sister watched. That was her age group. I was the original All That, you know, Amanda Show group.
See, I didn't remember the Amanda Show.
I did because it was such a big part of our lives.
I just remember
Saturday nights.
My kids would have on Sam and Kat, and I would be like, whose voice is that and how do I make it stop? Like, Ariana Grande's voice was wild. I just remember being like, oh my God, that girl and that voice.
Yeah, it's very like breathy and like childlike. It's weird.
It is kind of weird. I feel bad for all of these people though.
Yeah.
It's all right, let's get into it. So we're talking 2024's Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. Now, I listened to Kate Casey had the director and the whatever producer on her show. And I listened to it and they said the idea for this came out of that series of TikTok videos where people were putting like those shorts of Ariana Grande, like milking the potato and stuff on TikTok and being like, this does not seem like a kid's show. And so
I remember
that.
Yeah, I remember seeing those. My sister was watching them and she's like, oh yeah, I do remember this. That is weird. And But you want to hear something funny? Before I got this, I saw that there was another Nickelodeon documentary. It came out on 2020, and it's called The Orange Years. And like the opening alone of that, it's like in your face, up-tempo, vibrant, super colors. And you hear, you know, 13 hours, 7 days a week programming for kids. And it's this whole happy-go-lucky thing. You see Larissa Olnick, you know, from The Secret World of Alex Max. You see Kenan Thompson, you see Melissa Joan Hart, and they're all talking about like how fun it was to have a network catered to kids. And so a lot of those interviews, they're just talking about the actual establishment of Nickelodeon as a network, and that it was basically out of response of providing content for children that was fun and vibrant. And then they chose the color orange because it could go with anything, and also they could use their brilliant slogan, "Aren't you glad you got Nickelodeon?"
Oh, okay. So so there's no mention of any of this in that documentary. Oh,
everything is super go-lucky, super funny, and like the creators and like everyone that started from the inception of the network. And then you even see Drake Bell. He's on it talking about watching You Can't Do That on Television and how that was revolutionary.
With My Love, Alistair.
Yeah, he was like so revolutionary for kids. And I'm like, oh, the next documentary, you won't be singing those praises.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I just thought it was interesting, the contrast with opening from this documentary and that one.
I'm going to have to watch that because now I'm well down this rabbit hole. And oh, my God. First of all, how brave of Drake Bell to do this.
Amazing.
I was like, first of all, to go to court, to be sitting there with that other side of the court filled with your peers and celebrities and to still like, you know, be able to get out of bed in the morning. I can't believe the strength that this kid has. It's unbelievable.
And also
he's a guy now, but you know, what
from
I mean.
Like a financial standpoint, like I'm sure we'll talk about this later on with some of like the young Black actors. It's like they were the meal ticket out. So I can imagine that maybe for Drake Bell, there was a similar situation where he was kind of bringing in the money that the family needed. So it was like, yeah, we'll sue, but then we'll, I guess, move on, you know, and keep working. I don't know.
Yeah, and it sounds like his parents had a pretty contentious divorce. Like, even though they seemed like lovely parents, it seems like the divorce itself was kind of contentious. So there's probably, and I mean, my parents divorced when I was 21, and I still feel this. There's that sense of, like, I need to mend things in my family. You know what I mean? So there was probably a lot of that. Like, I can't really make too much noise because I'm trying to be the rift here. Right. Or the mend, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's get into it. So, we see they open with Dan Schneider getting the first ever Nickelodeon Lifetime Achievement Award. Everybody's up on stage. They're fawning over him. Now, I have to tell you something funny. I was talking to somebody, I think it was Amanda, maybe it was Stephanie, and I was like, oh, that Dan Schneider, you know who I used to think he was? Ricky from Better Off Dead. And then I looked and it was him. He was Ricky in Better Off Dead.
Oh my God. I've seen that movie so many times.
I just thought it was like somebody who looked like him. No, it was him. Okay. Ugh. So I also have a note here that this kind of behavior in Hollywood, Corey Feldman has been sounding the alarm on this for decades.
For decades, and people have written him off as just being crazy or on drugs or whatever, just very dismissive of him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but, and both Coreys. Look at what happened to Corey Haim.
Yeah.
So the shows that he is a writer on are All That and Kenan and Kel. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes a creator on The Amanda Show, What I Like About You for the WB, iCarly, Victorious, Sam and Cat, Henry Danger, Drake and Josh, Zoe 101, and Game Shakers, just to name a few. There's more.
Yeah.
I wrote, oh my God, he was the guy in Better Off Dead, Ricky. And he was Dennis Blunden in Head of the Class, which I loved that show.
That was before my time.
Oh, I loved it. Loved it. So this kind of started in the Me Too movement. In 2017, the internet videos start making the rounds that we talked about, like the videos of porn, clearly porn setups. Foot fetishes, squirting goo on girls' faces, Ariana Grande milking a potato, pouring water on herself in a very sexualized way. And people start speaking out. And then Jeanette McCurdy writes her book, which you read, right?
Yes, I've read it. And I attended one of her book tour stops. And mm-hmm. she talked about not being silenced, because this was one of the questions brought up. It's like, you know, you do talk about people not wanting you to name names in your book. And she says that the amount of money that they were offering her was like a joke. And she was like, you can't buy my silence. And let yeah. alone for that small amount.
Good for her. Good for yeah. her. So her book was called I'm Glad My Mom Died, and she had written about people assume it's him, allegedly. Yeah. She calls him the creator in the book. So a lot of the people that we see are Giovanni Samuels from All That, Alexa Nichols from All That, Mark Summers, Double Dare host I grew up with, Scotchy, I think her name is, Cole, she's a culture writer. Leon Frierson, he's from All That. Katrina Johnson from All That. And Kate Taylor, who's also a journalist. There's a lot more, but those are just the main people.
Yeah.
So Dan Schneider arrives in Hollywood in the late 1990s. He comes from a father who went to Harvard, and his parents are pretty much like, you're going to be a fuck up. So we don't really expect much from you. Like, he was kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes to Hollywood. He lands the part on Head of the Class. He was 19. And that was like the big, his big break. And he was always cast as the fat kid, which is definitely how he was portrayed in Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
And he co-writes some of the Head of the Class episodes. And that is like his ticket into Hollywood. Now some dude from Nickelodeon comes to him and asks him to co-write All That in 1994. Dan was only 28 when he was asked to do this. It's a sketch comedy for kids, and he helps launch the career of Kel and Keenan. Now, you saw Keenan responded to this, right?
Yes, he did recently. Yeah, did you get the quote?
No. Do you have the quote?
I don't have the exact quote, but I know that he said something to the effects of, you should keep investigating.
Good for him. I'm glad, because yeah. I was nervous he was going to come out and defend. No. But I'm glad. I'm really glad. And I remember them in Good Burger. Didn't he co-write Good Burger, Dan Schneider? Do you remember that movie?
Yeah. Hi, welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order? Yeah.
Yep.
My God. Last year, I met Kel, and it was so fun. I went to 90s Con, and I met, like,
you met all these people, right?
Yeah, I met all these people. Had I known that this had happened, I would have given them bigger hugs. I don't know. Yeah.
Was Drake Bell there?
No, he was not. So Keenan was there for like one day. He only did one day because he has to fly back to do, well, drive back to New York to do SNL.
Saturday Night Live,
Yeah, and then Keenan was there. Mary Beth was there. So it was like a bunch of the other cast members, but it was so fun.
Was
and
Dan Schneider like looming in the background?
Oh God, no. But I was sitting on the couch. I got to sit on that orange couch.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. So he helps launch the career of Kel and Keenan, and Katrina Johnson now says that Dan Schneider was her mentor. He was there through her entire career. He chose her. He reminded her of this often, and Dan loved her. And then they started thinking about creating the Katrina Johnson show. You know, it was like she was on her way. At first, by all accounts, Dan is fine. He's fun. He's self-deprecating. Everyone likes him. He works hard. He plays hard. And then they say there are these 8 to 15-year-olds who are often responsible for the entire financial security of your family. So when you think about it from that point of view, like, what happens if you get in trouble and this all goes away?
Right.
You spend all your time. This was a great quote. This was from that journalist. She said, you spend all of your time working, hoping that people don't poke the soft spots in your body and in your brain. I thought that was a great quote about child actors. So now we meet Leon. He's a young kid, and he says the leotards were very tight, very suggestive.
Yes.
There's a character named Noseboy. Did you remember this?
Captain Big Nose was the name. Okay. And he had like testicle-like shaped dicks. Like, they're supposed to be giant noses, but they look like balls and dicks and just like on his shoulders. The whole point of it is that, oh no, you don't want him to sneeze because then achoo, cum shot on your face. What is this?
It's totally a cum shot. Totally. He sneezes and clear goo ends up on women.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, we don't really see it happening to men. It happens to women. Leon says, I was a trooper and I didn't complain because being close to Dan was equal to success. So again, this power dynamic. And now the power dynamic is difficult when you're an adult. Imagine as a child.
Ugh. But also, he was portraying himself as one of them. He's just a big kid and he likes doing all the things a kid does. I get kids. I'm like a big kid myself. Mm-hmm. So he got their confidence, you know, their all that. Confidence that and
disgusting. Which, you know, a 30-year-old man shouldn't really be saying.
Yeah, it's creepy.
The producers call Katrina's parents one day and they're like, guess what, she's too fat, and we already have a fat one. And Katrina's like devastated and crying like, oh, I can't be the fat one. I'm thinking, whoa, let's revisit this.
Yeah,
what about the quote-unquote fat one? Who are we talking about? Who is that? I don't even know. On all that, was there an overweight
Mary
person?
Beth, yeah.
That is,
she was the news anchor.
Horrific. Like, I understand Katrina is very hurt and two things can be true. Like, that was awful to say to her. But poor Mary Beth, in the meantime, is just being called the fat one. We already have the fat one. Ugh, this gets my cackles up. Okay. So now she is being edged out by a younger version of herself. Dun, dun, dun. Enter Amanda Bynes.
Yeah.
Okay. I will be very honest. I don't know much about Amanda Bynes. I knew her. What was that movie she was in where she was either playing a princess?
What a Girl Wants? I think it's when she goes to like London or something.
Yes. Okay. So she's discovered at the Laugh Factory supporting Katrina and they see Amanda. So the Nickelodeon execs all go over to Laugh Factory. They're supporting Katrina. They see Amanda and Dan Schneider is like, this girl's a star. And I agree. She is great.
I agree. 10 years old. She's on stage. She has a bit.
She has a bit at 10 years old. I think I was like picking my nose and eating it at that age. Like, what the fuck?
And she's talking
about soap operas.
And she's talking about, I had a pimple in my nose and this is like God's punishment. You know, like it was something cutesy.
Wow. It was pretty sophisticated though for her age. I was like,
yeah.
So she grows close to Dan and they form this friendship and they're always off writing and they're always off together. So the law was at the time that parents had to be on the set or within earshot, like a parent. And Leon says Amanda's parents were very hands-on. Katrina says Amanda's dad treated her like a wind-up doll. He was very controlling, very involved.
Yeah,
he was very close with Dan, and together they worked to craft her career. And Katrina eventually gets snubbed out, and she's like, "I left and fucked off and went to college and like built a life for myself." The Amanda Show is the first show that Dan creates, and that begins his rise to power. And somebody says, I don't know who says this, but somebody says having a girl be a lead in a comedy is a huge step forward for women in Hollywood, but it was not all good behind the scenes.
Right. And she was a young kid. She was a teenager.
Yes. So 1999, there's not a lot of women in sketch comedy. Certainly not a lot of women writers. Still not. Christy Stratton and Jenny Kilgan are hired to write for the show, but they're asked to split a salary.
That infuriated me.
This is some shit you would see. I'm not going to mention the industry by name, but it's an industry you and I both worked in. This is some shit you would see in that industry.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this. So they're getting two for the price of one. And Jenny's like, I didn't want to be a complainer.
Yeah. Because basically Dan believed that women weren't funny.
No, Dan day one is like, oh, by the way, BT Dubs, I don't think women are funny, even though I just hired two women to write on this comedy show.
Yeah.
And the show literally is based around a woman being the comedian. So then he says the bottom line is he creates a toxic work environment. So
creates
characters like Penelope Taint, and he tells the writer's room, like, keep this all our little secret. And if anybody asks, it's Taint, like tainted something. He would instant message Jenny and Christy at their desks and make them scream things like, I'm a slut or I'm an idiot. he would dare them to do things and not pay them. He would, like, just stupid things. At one point, Jenny says he would watch porn and he would ask them for massages, and the massages, like, became a thing. That was a common throughout this whole story. And one day he made Christy tell a story while leaning over a table pretending to be sodomized.
I was like, how, what work environment is this? And no one else, and this is in front of other writers, no one else, none of the men had the freaking cojones to be like, dude, that's weird.
I know.
They just probably just, like, laughed along.
I understand the women not being able to speak up because there clearly was not a warm enough environment or a safe enough environment for that to happen. But some of these fucking men could have said something.
Yeah. It's, all it took was one man to say, dude, that's fucked up. What if that's your sister? Then the other guys would be like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they'll turn too.
Christy doesn't deny it, but you could tell she is not happy that Jenny told that story. She's like, hmm. So mid-season, Jenny hears that having writers split a salary is illegal. So she calls the Writers Guild. Then Dan calls her home. He's like, did you fucking call the Writers Guild? And he, like, threatens her. She lies, but, you know. Now she says things are getting real dark. And his jovial vibe is gone. He's angry. He's yelling. He's mean. And in the last week of work for season one of The Amanda Show, Christy's fired. She had done two personal things. So apparently during the season, when you're writing, you're not allowed to do anything, because what she did was, like, she went to a concert on the weekend and then she had friends over one night. So he fires her.
Yeah.
So now what he does when he brings them back for season two is he offers them a 16-week contract, but they have to work 27 weeks. This is some bullshit.
Yeah. So it's like you're repaying some time or whatever.
Yeah. Yep. Meanwhile, he hires, of course, a white male at full salary.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Jenny lasted 4 days of season two. When he asked, she quit after he asked her in a room full of men if she used to be a phone sex operator. This motherfucker.
This is disgusting. There's Jenny no HR in this company in Viacom.
Nope. Jenny decides to sue him. I was waiting for this. And gender discrimination, harassment, hostile work environment. They did an investigation, and of course she loses her career over it. Of course.
Of course.
But they did settle for an undisclosed amount. So this means this did not go away. This was a thing.
Right.
But guess what? His first show, he has this on his record. He still goes on to do a bunch of shit.
Yep.
So episode two starts with Amanda. So episode one essentially establishes that Dan Schneider fostered an extremely toxic work environment. So that's, I like the way the documentary is set up.
Right.
Because it's like, here's the environment these kids were working in. Then these things happen to these kids. And that's why they can't say anything.
Right.
I thought it was good. So Amanda, 16 now, wants to work on What I Like About You. Did you ever watch that?
I did, because of Jenny Garth, because I love 90210. So I watched it, like, I didn't see, like, the whole series. I'll watch it once in a while when it was on. And you know what? Last year at 90s Con, Jenny Garth, because it was, like, all of 90210 basically was there, the cast.
I almost asked, was Luke Perry there? No, he
was not.
In spirit,
he was.
Yes.
But there was also Amanda Bynes. She was booked and she was going to make her first public appearance. It was going to be this big comeback thing.
Really?
They were building it around 90s Con, and they even had photo shoots set up with Jenny Garth and Amanda Bynes as, like, a What I Like About You packet, so you could pose with them and everything. And then the day of, we get alert that no, Amanda had to cancel, and then they were issuing refunds and stuff. And then that was the weekend when she was found in the streets wandering around naked last year.
Aww.
It was that weekend.
This poor girl. We'll talk about her at the end of this, because I don't know a lot about her public problems.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping you do. I hope you, as my pop culture consultant, can bring that knowledge. Okay. So the network, so the co-creator on this show is Will Calhoun from Friends.
Yep.
And they can't get along. And eventually they push Dan out. And they're like, this guy, he probably wanted to do the most bizarre sexual things. And Will Calhoun was probably like, no. Mm-mm. Like, we're just going to pivot a couch. That's my kind of humor. I don't know what you're doing. So Amanda was dating a much older guy at some point, and her parents do not want her to. She runs away. They don't know what happens, but they know Dan gets involved in this and tries to help her, which you never do as an adult. Don't ever do that. And he decides he's going to help her get emancipated.
Mm-hmm.
This would also free her up to work harder and work longer days and be treated as an adult. Dan made her, Amanda was conflicted because Dan made her career, but they're her parents.
Right.
So Dan and Amanda lose in court, and now there's a huge rift with her parents and Dan Schneider. And he gets kicked off of What I Like About You, and he comes crawling back to Nickelodeon. He resurrects all that with the new cast, and on the show, Dan becomes some sort of character where he's like this monstrous boss. It's almost like a Charlie from, I almost said from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
No, Charlie's Angels.
We bring in Willy Wonka and Charlie into this. That's a whole different documentary.
Fizzy lifting drink.
Oh my God. So we meet Giovanni Samuels now, and she's on this season too. And she says she was definitely the token black girl. Mm-hmm. And Brian Herd was definitely the token black kid.
Right.
And he says he was trying to get his family out of the hood, and they ignored a lot of child labor laws. And he also did a lot of uncomfortable shit because, again, these two were trying to earn money for their families.
Right.
Brian Hearn, his mother, is like amazing.
Oh my God. I loved her so much.
I loved her.
Oh my God, that little thing. Did you get any notes in the little fetus, that skit that they made him do?
No, go ahead. Tell us about it.
So apparently he was supposed to be Little Fetus, the youngest rapper of all time. And he was inside, obviously, a womb. So he was wearing like a skin tight colored, like skin colored thing. So he was basically naked, and he felt as he was a growing, you know, teenager. He was feeling uncomfortable with his body, and it was just, it just seemed very odd. That whole thing. Then
didn't somebody say something like, oh, the color of the leotard should be charcoal?
Yeah, that's what they said.
It was gross.
It's so disgusting.
They have him doing skits where it looks like he's selling drugs.
And he's selling Girl Scout cookies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's like drugs.
Yeah. So Mama Brian, his mother, is like incensed. And
Tracy Brown. That's her name.
Tracy Brown. I need Tracy Brown on my team, because I know, Brian's like, I didn't even want to tell my mother because I know she'd burn this fucking place down to the ground. And she's like, I know that I was a problem because I was pointing things out and I was saying things. Okay. So they interview some directors and editors who worked with Dan, and they're like, he created a toxic work environment. So we're getting this. This is just all, you know, whatever. Now we meet MJ, Brandy's mom. Now, what are your thoughts on this? Do we know who Brandy is?
Is this the one where the child decided to leave Hollywood?
This is the one with the email from Jason. Yeah. Hand. But no, they don't know. They claim that they don't know what her real, who she really is.
I'm not exactly sure who that is.
So Brandy grew up watching The Amanda Show. She gets a part as an extra. Jason Handy was the production assistant. He was the all-American boy next door. He's very close with the moms. He wanted to know all about the family dynamics of the kids. That is red flag number one.
Yeah, and he has like that haircut, like that I'm a good, wholesome boy haircut, clean shaven.
Red flag number two.
Polo shirts. Come on now.
Red flag number three, a polo shirt.
She's joking in case she gets a sponsor with polo one day.
So on the ride home one day, Brandy tells her mom that Jason wants to email her. He was impressed with her. He wants to email her, and he's very connected. So mom's like, okay, this seems harmless. Before we judge mom too harshly, guys, keep in mind, like, this is the beginning of the internet. This is the beginning of social media is not even a thing yet. So, like, we just didn't think about things the way that we do now. Like, today, if somebody was, like, emailing my 17-year-old, I'd be like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Who is this person?
Yeah. So mom's like, you know, maybe this will help her career. So it's okay. So he emails her. Mom reads it. It seems all innocent. Then a few months later, Brandy slams down the computer lid, runs to her room. Mom goes after her. What's wrong? She says, Jason sent her a dick pic of him masturbating. And he sent it to her because he wanted to, her to see he was thinking of her. Jesus.
Wow.
Whew. So mom starts to cry. She says, I didn't know whether or not to call the police. They'll think I'm a bad parent because I let her do this.
Yeah.
And she decided against it, but she pulled Brandy out of the business. And I just wrote, no, I get it. But how many other girls did he do this to because you didn't tell the police?
Yeah. And I think that we should try to give mothers grace because
I know.
They don't know what to do at the time. But moms, it doesn't matter what people think. Report these things. You have to, so they won't do it again.
I totally get what she was saying when she was like, they're going to think I was a terrible mother because this, you know, I understand that. I do. But you need to push through that and you need to think about the other Brandys in the world who don't have a mom like you have.
Exactly.
And they're not paying attention and they're not advocating for their child because, you know, maybe they just don't have that kind of relationship. Ugh. Okay. So one day Brandy's mom gets a call from a detective. It's a little bit later. Time has passed. Law enforcement has been tipped off. And in 2003, they search Jason Handy's home and they find a ton of pornographic material containing young girls. There were over 10,000 images. They find Ziploc bags with girls' names on it, and inside each bag is a token of the girl.
And one of them was like a panty or something.
From a seven-year-old. This guy. So the reason they're calling Brandy is one of the bags had her name on it. That is chilling to me. Like, as a mother, oh my God. Mom decides to, you know, if Brandy's comfortable, allow her to testify and cooperate with the investigators. And she does. And he's arrested in 2004, pleads no contest, is sentenced to 6 years in prison. Why are we putting these men away for such short prison stints?
Why 6 years? That's nothing.
That's nothing. That seven-year-old isn't even an adult by the time he gets out of jail.
No, it's disgusting. They need to be different kind of laws. And I know that you're supposed to register as a sex offender, but a lot of people find ways to get around that and end up working with children. It's really scary.
So this introduces us next to Brian Peck, who is Pickle Boy. Do you remember Pickle Boy?
No, because I did not watch that show, but my sister used to watch it. It was kind of like in the background.
What show was this on?
I think it was that not iCarly. It was, you know,
yeah, like it was in all that. I looked it up and gross.
Yeah.
Gross. All right. So we meet him and everybody thought the pickle was kind of weird, but they went with it. Whatever. You see a guest star of completely innocent and exonerated Ray Romano, who has nothing to do with this. Just they probably called him up and they were like, can you be on this show? And he gets a pickle and he's like, okay, that's weird. But he is not implicated in this at all. I want to make that very clear.
Yes. But he eats that pickle suggestively as one would.
He eats the pickle. So Brian was very integrated into the cast. The parents loved him. The kids loved him. He was a dialogue coach. They go to his house for a party and dude's got a room where he has a self-portrait of John Wayne Gacy in it. And turns out they're pen pals.
No. Lord.
In 2003, Brian Peck is arrested on 11 charges of child sexual abuse, and it's bad. Like, they're showing the documents. It's bad. And then there's a table read, okay? And Dan asks to speak to the kids without the parents in the room. And he's got, like, these lawyers with him.
Red flag.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, guess what, guys? Brian won't be here anymore. Does anyone have anything to say? What? You expect in a group setting like this that a kid who was sexually assaulted is going to say, oh, yeah, by the way, Brian rubbed my shoulders in an inappropriate way. Like, what are you doing?
It was disgusting. I don't know why that was allowed, that they were lawyers there and also being like, oh, yeah, the parents shouldn't be here. I feel like the lawyer should know better than that. At least the child's counsel should be there, if not the parents. Like, what's going on?
I talked about this recently. I forget which documentary I talked about it in, but I was like, we just see these things so differently now. Like after the Larry Nassar, after this kind of shit, yeah. after the Me Too movement, like parents are just so much more in tune with not trusting these institutions blindly.
Right.
But this is all before that. And the parents were just like, I really want my kid to have this thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't blame the parents. I totally get it. But looking back on it, it's hard. Like
it's really
and I'm
hard.
Sure a lot of these parents blame themselves and feel terrible. And right. they shouldn't. I mean, it was a product of what was happening at the time. So there was a kid who came forward. No one knows who the kid is. Even in the documentary, they say to one of the directors, this was a child actor. And he's like, from our show? No, not from our show. And they're like, yeah, from your show. People yeah. are stunned. And then we see mic drop. Drake Bell comes out at the end. And he says he's never told the story publicly.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. So episode 3 is the story of Drake Bell's abuse, essentially. Yeah. 2004 Drake and Josh debuts. Did your sister watch this? She did.
She did.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do remember he had like a stoner surfer. It was kind of very Spicoli-esque.
He was cute. Yes.
But
yes.
I'm like, why is he like that? Is he on drugs? Is that the implication? Like, what is going on with him?
Like, was the character on drugs?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, is he like Spicoli, like lighting up in a van? I watched that movie yesterday, actually, Fast Times.
I love Sean Penn. He is like one of my top tier. So Drake's parents were going through a divorce. He was 5. His dad gets him into acting. Like, he's always kind of loved it and expressed an interest in this kind of stuff. And his dad becomes their manager, and it became kind of their thing they did together. So he gets like little guest spots on Home Improvement. He gets Jerry Maguire, and then he books The Amanda Show. Second season of The Amanda Show, Brian Peck comes in. Mm-hmm. Brian Peck, by all accounts, was a good guy to know. He knew a lot of people. As we will talk about later, he worked on Boy Meets World. He worked on Growing Pains, put a pin in those two things. He's been around. He yep. knows a lot of people.
He's a dialect coach, apparently.
Ryder Strong. Who's the other guy? Will. How do you say his last name?
Will Ferrell?
Friedel? Friedel?
I'm not sure if it's Ferrell.
I think it's Friedel. It's F-R-I-E-D-L-E. I think it's Friedel.
Okay.
He says they used to call him the Forrest Gump of television because he knew everybody. Okay. Mm. So that's the kind of guy you're dealing with. He comes in. He worked with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. And you see like little like footage of him. Mm-hmm. And even in that little clip with Leo, he's being a little too handsy.
Yep. Yep. So he starts coaching Drake at his house. But dad was like, I am always going to be within eye shot, not even earshot.
Doesn't his dad look like a bounty hunter? Like, he looks so cool.
His dad, yeah, looks awesome. 100%. Yeah. And what I love so much about his dad is he just expresses, like, freely his vulnerability and emotion. And I'm like, it's so refreshing to see a man do this.
Yeah.
And it says so much about our world that when you do see a man do this, you're like, wow. Okay. Yeah. Like a man of that age, especially. So Drake says he and Brian got very close because they had a lot of the same interests. That should be a red flag right there.
Yeah.
Like a 13-year-old should not have a lot in common with like a 35-year-old. Uh-uh. No. Dad says he started seeing Brian hang around Drake a little too much and he's growing sus. Like he's like, mm-mm. He would touch Drake's arm and stuff. And then dad actually mentions the video you just said. He said he saw a video of him with Leonardo DiCaprio where he's rubbing him in a uncomfortable way. And dad's like, no, 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 no. He goes to production and he reports this. And he's like, I don't feel good about it. And the woman says, well, he's gay and maybe you're homophobic.
Wow.
Also put a pin in that because we'll talk about that later. Dad says he was ostracized for this. Mm-hmm. So now Drake and Josh get their own show and Brian is further integrating himself into his life. He's going to his concerts. Now, I didn't know Drake was a musician.
Yeah, apparently he went on tours and everything. I didn't know that either.
He plays guitar, it looks like, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those like child actors like Nickelodeon, Disney Kids, all those, they kind of put them together in little tours. you know? Right. So it's not uncommon.
Hey everyone, stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
So Dad is just seeing bullshit and he's on to this guy. And so Brian starts manipulating Drake to turn him against his father.
Yep.
And from everything we know about this guy, he is super fucking manipulative. Like, yeah, there's no way that these kids would not have been manipulated by him. I don't think there's any world in which they could have spotted what was happening.
No, he's a like textbook groomer.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
they isolate you from your family and from people, and mm-hmm. they say that they're the problem.
Yep. Yep.
You're safe with me. They're bad.
Yeah. He even has him convinced that he is stealing his money. That Dad is stealing his money.
Yeah. Just to turn him against him.
Yeah. And Drake even says now, like, there was never any financial mishandling. So eventually this works. And there's a distance. And one day Drake's mom calls up Dad and is like, you're out, I'm in. Dad starts to cry even thinking about this. Yeah. And he's like, I was so hurt, but I wanted him to have what he had. And he said And he says, the one caveat when I was giving everything over to mom is I said to her, you need to keep an eye on Brian Peck. I don't trust him. Mom's like, okay. Once mom has custody and control, she's easily manipulated by Brian and he gets unfettered access to Drake.
Right.
Drake is now allowed to sleep over his house. He takes him to Disney World. Drake says, then one morning he wakes up and Brian is sexually assaulting me. I was 15.
Yep.
It escalated from there. Drake says he often felt trapped. He says to the producer of the documentary, you think of the worst stuff that someone could do to you, a sexual assault, and that will tell you what I've been through.
Yeah.
He says it was not a one-time thing. It was constant. So how it's found out is through this girlfriend's mom.
Mm-hmm.
So Drake gets a girlfriend. He starts hiding out there. Brian starts blowing up his phone because he's supposed to take him to Disney and Drake doesn't want to go. Brian calls the girlfriend's house phone and Drake's cell phone. And mom is immediately like, uh-uh, something's up here. She calls Drake's mom and even tells him something is up.
Yeah.
She takes him to therapy. But did you, like, I couldn't tell if he told the therapist what happened. Do you know?
I don't know. It was a little unclear. It was just, I don't know if he, like, was forthcoming at that point.
We don't know because he does talk about doing a lot of therapy, but I think that was after.
Yeah, I think it was after probably the filing.
So I think he kind of lies. Oh, here, I have it. Like, I feel like he kind of lied to the therapist. I don't know this for sure, but it seems like he was like, yeah, I mean, it was getting weird, but good thing we caught it.
Right. It was kind of like, you know, downplaying it or something.
Yeah. So this continues, and Brian even tries to get himself cast as a dad on Drake and Josh. Then one day Drake just explodes on the phone with his mom and screams into the phone everything that has been going on. Mom immediately calls the police. He cooperates with the police. He says it was horrible. He had described to them in vivid detail everything that had happened to him.
Yeah.
He even had to call Brian and get him to confess, and he did confess.
Yeah, finally.
Bonkers. So, no one knew who this was, but Dan figured it out, and Dan called him, and he claims Dan was very supportive and very nice. And I'm thinking, of course, he's a white boy. Of course, Dan is good to this kid.
Oh, boy.
Like, Dan was very good to some people. He wasn't a monster to everybody.
And also, he was one of the stars of a profitable new show, so you mm-hmm. want to keep the talent happy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So his dad finds out and calls Drake, and Drake is like, see? And the dad is like, I'm just so glad he didn't get anywhere near you.
And not Drake knowing says, that it was yep. him. Yeah.
Drake says his dad was so upset, and they were in such a vulnerable place that he didn't tell them. And then we get Dad breaking down today, saying he's never going to be the same. He doesn't wish this on any parent or child. And he says he's still devastated to this day. And Drake says, you know, he threw himself into work after that. And he does say Dan was there for him, but no one else at Nickelodeon reached out. They didn't offer him therapy. He didn't get therapy. And he was just kind of dangling in the wind. So Drake had his own set of public problems that I didn't know about. Okay. Episode 4. Brian Peck is sentenced in 2004. His identity, Drake's identity, is sealed. This is important.
Yes.
He's known as John Doe. And Brian has an entire courtroom full of celebrities there to vouch for him. Drake says his side was him, his mom, and his brother. This was the sentencing. He had already pled guilty to two counts. So he pleads guilty to two charges of child sex abuse and does only 16 months in jail and is now a registered sex offender. Leslie, mm-hmm. let's talk about those letters.
I was baffled by some of the names. You know, Alan Thicke, who was like America's dad, essentially.
Yeah.
Even though he's Canadian.
And Jason Seaver is a therapist. He should know
exactly.
better.
Exactly. James but Marsden.
Wasn't Alan Thicke like marrying a 19-year-old girl himself at the time?
Who knows? It was.
I'm going to look that up while you read the rest.
He's actually gone now. Joanna Kearns, who was the mom, you know, she wrote this whole thing about knowing him and how he would never do that. And a lot of those things were very victim blamey, kind of like Brian would have never acted on those feelings had he had not been tempted so, or something to those effect. It was really disgusting.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have it here. Alan Thicke was born in 1947. He married his wife, who was born in 1976. Now, let me get out my little trusty calculator, because they got married in 2005. So if you're born in 1976, and it is 2005, you are how old? Let's see. 29, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're born in 1947, and it's 2005... You're 58. Okay, that's not as terrible as I thought it was.
Yeah.
I think there's, you know, worse offenses like this out there.
Okay. He has seen since passed.
Okay, so I'm not allowed to talk shit about him, but I'm still going to a little bit.
No,
this
just
was
saying,
a dickbag move.
Okay. R.I.P. Yeah. Whatever.
Joanna Kearns. Okay, now I want everyone listening to me, to remember the name that I'm about to tell you. The name is Beth Carell. And she was a Nickelodeon director. Was she a director? Yeah. She's either an executive producer or director. She's behind the scenes. Okay?
Right.
Beth Carell, guys. C-O-R-R-E-L-L. Her letter names Drake by his full name and says, I don't understand this because he seemed just fine. He wasn't acting like anything was wrong. Basically saying he made it all up.
Yeah.
Wow. And calls him a manipulator. We have letters from, you said, James Marsden, right?
Yeah.
Ryder Strong, Will Friedle. Yes. Tarum Killam? I don't know who that
is. Yeah, Tarum Killam from SNL. Okay. He's married to Colby Smulders.
Okay. Thomas DeSanto, X-Men producer. Ron Melendez. Do you know who that is?
Yes. Just by name. Like, I know the face, but I don't know what they do.
Okay. So I'm going to pull up this article from the Hollywood Reporter. Okay. In total, 41 people wrote letters of support for Peck, which were used to influence the judge during sentencing. Many of the letters asked for the judge to put Peck on probation rather than having him serve time in prison. Again, let me just remind everybody that he has pleaded guilty to child sexual abuse.
Okay. Right.
Among the recognizable names, we just read them all in a video. Okay, so Dan Schneider did this video, which I'll get to that later, and talked about it. In his letter, James Marsden wrote that he'd known Peck for 14 years, and I assure you, what Brian has been through in the last year is the suffering of 100 men. Killam wrote in his letter, I've seen the effects this situation has had on this situation, Leslie. This situation
that he created for himself. This has not happened to him. He did this.
Yep. Yep. I know for a fact that he regrets any mistakes that he made. Okay. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about our Pod Meets World boys, Ryder Strong and Will Friedle, who just coincidentally put out an episode about Brian Peck on February 19th. I suggest everyone listen to this because it is a wild, wild episode. So they have this woman on who is a marriage and family therapist who is problematic in her own right, from what I read, because she had something to do with the documentary about Jake Paul. Do you have any idea what this is?
No.
So apparently there was a YouTuber who made a documentary about Jake Paul. You know who he is.
Yeah.
And it was real problematic because they were like trying to diagnose him as being mentally ill. And this woman, you know, therapist 101, you shouldn't diagnose somebody who's not your client.
Exactly.
And so there was some ethical concerns around her to begin with. Okay, fine. So they bring her on to sort of navigate through this discussion. And these two talk over her the entire time, which drives me.
Yeah, insane. Not surprising. Mm-hmm.
Ryder Strong says things like, I'm really concerned that this is going to tarnish the reputation of Boy Meets World. Mm-hmm. He says things like, why are we revisiting this now? Something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, okay? Making it very clear that I'm paraphrasing this. Something to the effect of, like, hasn't he suffered enough? Why are we dredging this all back up? And he's not talking about Drake. He's talking about Brian Peck. And the therapist, you could tell, is like, why am I here? And she kind of jumps in and tries to be like, well, this is part of the manipulating that he did to you. Like, you still see him as your friend. So, where I land on this whole thing is like, Will Friedle seems a bit more contrite. Like, he's kind of like, because this guy, and this is a really important piece of this. This guy did this to these two boys, to Will and to Ryder. He came onto Boy Meets World. He started with this bullshit of who he knows. He integrated himself into their lives. I truly believe that Ryder Strong narrowly escaped being a victim of Brian Peck's through circumstance. So they were heavily manipulated by him. They were told about this case. And Ryder says, like, we couldn't Google this. That wasn't a thing at this time.
Right.
They were told that this young guy tempted Brian. Brian told them this. This jailbait tempted me. And then when I finally gave in after years and years of him just trying to seduce me, when I finally gave in, then he cries rape. This is what Brian is saying.
Oh my God, that is so disgusting.
So these guys, okay, so then there's this whole added layer of it's the late 90s, the mid 90s when Boy Meets World is on. And Will talks about this a lot. Like there's still a lot of homophobia, right? Yes. And Brian Peck is an openly gay man. So they're trying to support him, and there became this weird phenomenon where anytime somebody would criticize him, it was couched, like, it was, how do I say this? It wasn't couched in, because that would mean it is that. It was, like, portrayed as, or seen as, or pushed back on as homophobia. So it was, like, real weird. Like, and it's either Ryder or Will, I can't remember who tells this story, but they tell this story about how Brian would say, look, older men like young girls, and nobody thinks that's wrong, which, yes, it is.
It's still wrong.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, so it's the same. You just think it's wrong because I'm gay, but it's the same thing. Like, I'm gay and I like younger boys.
These are children, though.
But he constantly kept couching it in that.
Yeah.
So, like, there was just a – this guy was a master manipulator.
And also, you have to understand, he probably was love-bombing the other ones, like, you know, and playing video games, because that was – he was one of them. So he was doing all these fancy things, or, look, I got the new, like, Xbox or whatever it is. Let's play here. So, of course, they're going to think, oh, yeah, that's my friend. So maybe he wasn't a predator towards them in that sense, but he was preying on other children.
Yes. And he manipulated them and he groomed them.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't groom them to abuse them, he groomed them to be part of
to just this. Be around and to vouch for him. I think that some of these people are so sick that there are some people that they keep around that they're fond of but won't cross the line with just so they could vouch for them and be like, he never did that with me and I slept over all the time.
Yep. And when you think about it, I have no doubt in my mind that the words that at some point Brian Peck said to Drake Bell, I'm good friends with Ryder Strong and Will Friedle. Like, I know them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he used all of them to build this persona to get to whoever he chose as his victim. It's sick. It's really sick.
Yeah.
My problem with Ryder Strong is as follows. The problematic view of it currently. Okay. And he says that he knew that day he was in the wrong. He says that. He's like, when I went in there, and Drake's mother turned around and said something to us, like she, you know, scolded them, which go mom.
Yeah.
He said, I knew I was on the wrong side of everything and I just wanted to die right then.
So doesn't that tell you something, Ryder?
Well, and not only that, for so many years afterwards, and Drake said this, he's like, I saw Ryder Strong on set all the time when we were working on Spider-Man together. Never once, not once did he say anything to me.
Wow.
He never said he was sorry. He never asked how I was doing. Not once. But all of a sudden, see, because here's the thing. When these people wrote these letters, they were told they would be sealed.
Yep.
Now they're unsealed. And they thought they would be sealed forever. And here they are. And we're opening up the vault. And all of a sudden, Ryder Strong is contrite and is, you know, upset about what he did. I don't fucking buy it. And I'm done with him. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, my crush for him died in the early aughts. I'm kind of over him, you know. I was more into Matthew Lawrence, so.
Listen, on Boy Meets World, Sean Hunter was everything to me. He was broken. I wanted him 100%. But
I would never
forget it.
Get him. He would have been, I would have been like his basketball buddy, like the little tomboy coming in, because that's kind of like my vibe in the 90s. So yeah, but I'd be lusting for, you know, Matthew Lawrence because he's a hot one.
Yeah. Yeah, he was hot, but I need a little bit of damaged, you know me. So another thing is throughout the whole episode, Will and Ryder just keep saying that they don't want to, they're doing this against their will. They don't want to, oh, we don't want to do this. We don't want to talk about this. Well, it must be nice to have that fucking decision of whether or not you're going to revisit this tough spot in your life and not have to live with it every fucking day like Drake Bell does. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
All right.
Because all they're living and bitching, living with and bitching about are just the fact that they got called out for supporting someone who's a known child abuser.
Yep.
That's and Drake, their thing and Drake that they're carrying said, along.
Drake said many people were asked to write letters and didn't.
Yeah.
So there you go. Dan Schneider didn't. So there you go.
Yeah, that should tell you something.
Kimmy Robertson.
Covering his own ass.
Kimmy Robertson, let's also put her on the fucking trash pile, because she wrote that she believed Brian was pressured and pushed beyond belief before he finally caved.
Yeah.
So again, Drake was the little seductress at 15 and seduced like a 30-year-old man. Okay. So now Brian Peck gets a job at Disney thanks to trash people Beth Carell and her husband Rich, who are also working on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. He gets a job there. They know that he is a convicted child sexual abuser. They wrote letters. They see him show up on this set and they don't say anything. I can't even. Okay.
It's insane. People that have probably lied to themselves enough to believe that their quote unquote friend is not capable of that, or they just don't care and they're complicit and they're like, this person brings us money and hit TV.
Like I said, Ryder Strong was 24 years old when he wrote that letter. Mm-hmm. And he had been massaged and groomed and, you know, manipulated as fuck. I don't blame him for writing the letter. Do I think it was a great idea? Absolutely not. Right. It is all the actions afterwards. When you realized it was a bad idea, how do you not, when you see this guy again, say, oh my God, let me take you out to lunch. Let's talk. Yeah. Let me fall on my sword. Or make a statement. You know, you make a statement to the press. You don't have to say who the actor is. Right. But you can make a statement saying, look, this happened. Or I just find it odd that it's suddenly he has to talk about it now. And he's real pissed off that he's being forced to talk about it.
Yeah.
I said I was done. I'm really done. Okay. I'm telling you, I need blood pressure medicine after this. So in 2005, Azelle Chanel, I don't know, brings a boy to the lot and was convicted of abusing that boy on the lot. He had prior convictions and Nickelodeon didn't catch it. That is three predators now who worked for Nickelodeon. Three. So Brian Peck was not a registered sex offender when he was hired. So there's no way that could have been caught. But the other two were. Like, they had convictions in their past. So Nickelodeon's like, gee, maybe we better, Leslie, start doing background checks even on freelancers.
Oh,
do a background check on every single fucking person that walks onto that set that is going to interact with the child.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
You should do that with any business, actually, because you don't want to hire someone that is like has gun charges and you don't know about it.
So basically episode four, and I'm just going to summarize it really quick because we're going on an hour already and we still have things to say. So basically, you would think this is the end of Dan Schneider's career because all of this happened on his watch. But no, it's not. He just gets more power. By the late 2000s, he's like a juggernaut at Nickelodeon. And he's still doing this creepy, sexualized jokes. Women are getting slapped in the face with sausages. He talks about being on the wood. We see Ariana Grande. This is when all that shit happens.
Yeah.
In Victorious, there are those online shorts. Oh, it's in Victorious. Yeah. Is Ariana Grande in Victorious?
I think she's in Victorious. And then Sam and Kate. Sam and Kat. Or was she in iCarly? I can't remember. To be fair, I was too old for that. That was like my sister's thing.
Yeah.
But I only know Jeanette McCurdy. I know her through her, you know, memoir, essentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how I got to know her. Like, I knew her peripherally through my sister, like watching her on TV, but didn't know much of her.
In 2014, he gets his Lifetime Achievement Award, like we saw in the opening. And Jeanette McCurdy's not on stage with them. And she's not a main on stage. Therapist.
And and this is the thing. Wasn't it chilling to see the opening? How they were like, this guy has given us all a career and this and this and this. And they're all smiling. And all this is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. So Jeanette's mom dies, like she writes about in her book. She takes less than a week off of work.
Yeah.
So eventually people start like investigating and he's not allowed to interact with the cast anymore. And he's pulled back to just give notes and be in the writer's room and be behind the scenes. But you know what really fucking takes this motherfucker down? The Me Too movement.
Yep. Finally.
So a customer on his shows finally feels that the Me Too movement gives her safety and permission to report the bullshit that he's been doing. And when she calls her union, they're like, oh, you're not the first person to call.
Wow.
So they fire him, Leslie, with the $7 million paycheck.
Yeah.
As you do. As you do. So Dan Schneider still has not made a new TV show. He can never come back, they don't think. Like, the people, yeah, the correspondents are like, I don't think he's ever coming back. These kids are adults now, and the experiences that they have had have changed them, and not in good ways. Some good, sure, but many have been traumatized.
Yeah.
They talk about the Coreys and Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and how this has always been a problem with child stars. Aaron Carter, Amanda Bynes. Now we see Amanda Bynes entering adulthood, having a lot of public mental health issues. So she was on her way to be a movie star.
Yeah, what happened? She was.
She just kind of derailed, or?
I think that she got kind of caught up in that whole, like, you know, the early odds had all, they had like Paris Hilton, Britney, Lindsay Lohan. They were portrayed like as these bad girls, like these airheads. They're just, you know, you know, just waiting to get paparazzi shots and all this stuff. And she kind of got caught up in that whole thing as well. But she was under a conservatorship by her parents for many years. And so that did not help with her mental state.
This poor girl.
Yeah.
Now, somebody said at some point that she had put something up on Twitter, maybe.
Yes. She wrote, I want Drake to murder my pussy. And it was so alarming to people, started trending, that people were like, check on Amanda Bynes, she's not right. And I'm like, why? Because she wants to get laid? But no, it was just, yeah, it was pretty wild.
So Drake himself goes on to have some real problematic stuff. He has to declare bankruptcy, he loses his house, he has a DUI. He also is charged with sending text messages to a minor.
Yeah, that was a little weird. Oh, and let me clarify. When I said the Amanda, the tweet was Drake the rapper she was referring to, right, not Drake Bell.
Yes, no. Yeah. Chantel's Drake.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So then he says he checked himself in. Drake says, Drake Bell, says he checked himself into a treatment center, and he says it was the first time in his life he felt like the people around him wanted him to get better, and he starts to cry. That was very moving. The end scene is Drake's dad comforting him, saying, like, better days are ahead. And Drake's like, I hope so. And he's like, yeah, you just got to keep moving forward. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
And my rage is done now. So, Leslie, let's hear your thoughts. What does the Hollywood industry, sets that employ children especially, what do they have to do to prevent this kind of shit from happening in the future?
Well, the thing is that they actually need actual child advocates on set.
Yeah.
Because they need someone that would hold the production to task to make sure that these breaks are being met, that they're being fed, that they don't work overtime. Because there are child labor laws for a reason. And that's why that was kind of like the loophole in Hollywood in the 90s or like 80s with the whole like emancipating these child actors, emancipating themselves. Drew Barrymore was one of them. You know, that way they could work longer hours, do whatever they want, because then they essentially are declared a legal adult. And so we really need more people to advocate for these child actors, and mental health professionals, I think, should be on every set of... They should be on every job. I feel like we should have a mental health person at every company or something, because you never know.
I absolutely agree with you. The more people that shine the light, the better. The more more people that are there. Because these people, like, I don't know if you are familiar with the Larry Nassar case, but he was abusing these girls their mothers in the room.
The USA Gymnastics.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. He was abusing these girls with their mothers standing there, because you are entering as a mom, you are entering an industry you know nothing about, and you're trusting these authority figures, in quotes, that they know what they're doing. You know what I mean? So when he's saying, I have to check your pelvic floor, you're like, okay. Like, it's so... abuse does not always look like we think it looks.
Yeah.
You know, grooming does not always, it's not always obvious. The bottom line is, in the this therapist who was on the Pod Meets World podcast said this. If there is somebody who is in their late 20s or 30s who is friends with your teenager, red flag.
Yes.
Red flag. Like, they should not have enough in common that they're able to hang out all the time.
Yeah.
That's a problem. It's weird.
I mean, it's so weird. And also, you have to understand with show business how selective it is, and everybody's trying to get a big break. And if you have a gig and then you quote unquote complain, you'll mm-hmm. get replaced. And a lot mm-hmm. of people don't want that. Or if once they start getting a name for themselves, they're on a show or something, someone, you know, on set is harassing them or doing something that they don't like, mm-hmm. well, that person could get them fired and then say blacklist them and be like, this person is impossible to work with. So people have all of this in mind. It's also not just glitz and glamour, it's livelihood. Like, these
Absolutely.
People have chosen to go this career path. We saw during the pandemic how bad a lot of actors and other workers that worked in the arts, how much they suffered because they really depend on these checks. So yeah. these are yep. their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, and I just want to be very clear, I am not skirting over Drake Bell being accused of being inappropriate with a younger person. That is a right. serious offense. And I do believe he has taken responsibility for it. He pled guilty to it and everything else. But you have to understand that that is very common. I mean, you're the psychologist here. People who are abused do tend to abuse sometimes, yeah. right? Like, that could be hurt people, hurt people. Like, that yeah. could be part of his internalized, what he calls self-destructive behavior.
Yeah, but there's not all people that have been abused go on to abuse others.
Of course, yes.
But of course, there are the few that do. Mm-hmm. And I hope that for Drake Bell's sake, that he is still seeking counseling Me and too. Really is putting his mental health first. Because now that this has come out, the internet is going insane. Everybody's yeah. talking about it. And yeah. I can't even imagine what kind of people are messaging him. Because yeah. there are trolls and there are mean people that like, make fun of, especially young men who are sexually abused. So that's why they don't come out as often.
I don't think we can comprehend. So many of us have an experience, let's say high school, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know what it used to feel like when you had to go up against the popular girls in high school?
Yep.
Or you had to, you know what I mean? Like, there's such a ecosystem that is in of itself where popularity is everything. And I can't imagine what 15-year-old Drake Bell had to go through in that courtroom with all of those people, feeling like not only am I turning in this quote unquote good guy that everybody loves, but now all of Hollywood is against me. Like, yeah. I can't even imagine what that had to feel like at 15. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Like, that's why I give him some grace that he is making some real bad fucking decisions, because I don't even know the trauma that that had to have, the traumatic effect that that had to have on him. It's unbelievable to me. And then on top of that, feeling like you have to mend your family, or you've yeah. let you know, you've cut your father out of your life. And wow, that. How brave of him to come out and speak.
Very
now,
brave. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's like a rumored another part of this coming out.
There is another
later
part
in April.
Coming out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that's going to reveal. I wonder who will participate in that, because Kenan Thompson was kind of like, yeah, you guys should keep investigating. That was kind of like his whole take yeah. on that.
Yeah. And then I saw that Melissa Joan Hart came out with a response that people mm-hmm. are given her some grief about, but I didn't see what her response was. Do you know?
It was something to the akin of like, you know, I had a lovely time at, you know, my days at Nickelodeon were lovely and blah, blah, blah. Kind of to the effects of that.
Which, I mean, fine. That's fine. Her experience.
And also, he didn't work on that set. So, totally
right.
possible.
And I think Kenan said the same thing, right? Yeah. That he didn't work on his set that much. But so, people are like, yeah, he kind of did. He was on Good Burger and, you know.
Yeah. Kenan and Kel. That was a spinoff.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. I think we've said it all.
Too much, in fact.
Oh, my God. I was so angry over the Boy Meets World bullshit. I don't know why. I think because, again, and two things can be true. I understand these guys were manipulated and they were young when this happened. And, I mean, I can't be accountable for the shit I did when I was 24. I was an idiot. I married someone who I know I should not have at 24.
Girl, same thing.
Yeah. So it's like, I get that part of it. But, like, we're older and wiser now. Like, why are you still having a bad take about this? I don't understand this. So I don't know, guys. Let me hear from you in the comments. If you listen to that Pod Meets World episode, I want to know. Again, it aired on February 19th, and it's called Grooming or something.
Oh, great and, title.
Yeah, and you could tell, like, I don't know her real name. What's the girl's name?
Danielle Fishel?
Yeah.
Topanga?
Topanga. Yeah. I only know her as Topanga. You could tell Topanga's, like, trying to be their PR person. And I'm like, girl, just let it speak for itself. Don't get wrapped up in this. But I do feel bad for them because I do feel like they were manipulated by this guy. And that's why they wrote the letters. But how about the people who were full-fledged adults, Beth Carell, who wrote these letters?
Mm-hmm.
Full-fledged adults. Joanna Kearns.
I think that since then she's come on say, oh, she wasn't aware of the extent.
Oh, yeah. They all said that. Leslie, if I called you tomorrow and I was like, girl, I got some child sex abuse charges against me. I need you to write a letter to try to like, listen, this 12-year-old boy, like he just seduced me. I didn't know what to do. Can you write me a letter? Like, what?
No.
I would just be like, and if you don't have the balls to say no, just be like, oh, I'm out of town for the next couple of weeks. I don't have time to write this letter. Like, just don't have time to write the letter.
Exactly. I'll be like, yeah, sure. And just like block you. I'll be like, clearly this person is a sicko.
Because for the 41 people who wrote the letter, I'm sure there's 41 people he asked who said, no.
Mm-hmm.
Be those people.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. All right, girl. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, I wanted to clarify. I am not a licensed psychiatrist or psychologist. I know,
but you're studying. You're studying the human mind.
I'm one dissertation defense away from having a PhD in psychology, just for record. Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way, Leslie. You know more about it than I do.
I mean, I'm fascinated by people and their quirks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't call you Dr. DJ?
Not until September, hopefully.
Oh, that's exciting. What do you have coming up on Sinister Girls?
Right now, nothing.
You're still on break. Okay.
We're still on break, but, you know, if you follow the Sinister Girls TikTok, which until, you know, the government shuts it down, I've been having some fun remixing some little and mashing up some Housewives and Bravo content. That's fun.
That's fun. So, do you think the government's going to shut down TikTok?
I mean, that's the plan, unless an American buys it.
Because why is it? Because they want the makers to make some changes in it and they won't?
I think it's that they don't want the Chinese government with our information.
Right. So they're trying to have them enforce more policies, right?
Right.
But they're not doing it.
Yeah. I think somebody offered to buy it, some American company or something. I don't know.
Please, please, please don't let Elon Musk near it. Please.
No. Please
let's not do this again. Can't have it. Can't have it. All right, girl. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for bringing your pop culture millennial knowledge into this.
And I'll post in the group some of my pictures from 90s Caught. I met a lot of these people.
Did you meet Ryder Strong?
I sure did. I met the entire cast of Boy Meets World except for Mr. Feeny.
Oh, Mr. Feeny's the best one.
I know. He was there this year, but I didn't go this year.
Okay. He's love
97.
Wow.
I know.
I was not expecting that. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Leslie. I'll see you soon. Thank you so much. Right. Guys, if you haven't already, follow us on Facebook and get into our Facebook group, Backdoor Friends. Mm-hmm. Leave a 5-star review if you feel inclined. Follow us on Instagram at Lil Miss Recap and join our Patreon, Supercast, or Apple subscriptions where we're covering Sister Wives beginning in May. And we have a bunch of other stuff. We're doing Love during Lockup and we're doing... 90 Day Love in Paradise. Can't wait.
Love that.
Cannot wait.
Love that journey right, for you.
And follow Leslie at Sinister Girls on Instagram. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.